This is Stateside. I'm April Bear. You never know what can happen on Twitter. That's true in a good way, as well as in a bad way. For Nicole Tersini, a writer and comedian originally from Flint, now based in Metro Detroit, something that started as a single joke evolved into a viral thread, which ultimately became a book that was just published this month. The topic and the title is Men to Avoid in Art and Life. On each page, there's a pairing of a painting by some of the traditional Western European masters of visual art with a contemporary joke about when men say the darndest things. It's a funny and sometimes painfully relatable commentary on what women and others sometimes have to navigate in their conversations with men. Things like dismissive language, patronizing, or good old-fashioned mansplaining. Nicole Tersini is a writer and comedian based in Ferndale. Nicole, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
What was the original tweet that got all this going?
So the original tweet was actually, if I could back up a little bit, I was home with my daughter. She was homesick from school that day, and I was just very frazzled and looking to get on Twitter and kind of escape. And I saw a man explaining one of my friend's jokes to her, which is a phenomenon that has happened to me many times on Twitter.
What did he say?
I can't remember the exact thing, but it's always like they don't realize that we know that we made a joke. You know, they have to tell it back to us so that we really grasp the joke that we have made.
Wow.
Yes, that happens very often. It's very frustrating. But so then I just, you know, I Googled woman surrounded by men, because that's what that moment feels like sometimes, and not just online, but in life as well. And then one of the images that popped up was this woman holding her bare boob in her hand, surrounded by men. So my joke that I took from that image was, maybe if I take my tit out, they will stop explaining my joke back to me. and people loved it. It was very relatable, very funny. They just immediately connected with it. And so I stuck with the theme from there of taking these works of art with the women and the men and putting a little joke with it.
So you've got a background in comedy and writing, both improv and comedy writing. Will you talk about how those things led to this book?
Yes. So I do have a background in improv. I lived in Chicago for many years, and I studied improv at the Second City Training Center. And I was on several small improv teams with some friends. And, you know, we performed around the city occasionally and spent some years doing that, which was awesome. And I think that really built a wonderful foundation for me to be able to take things, take these huge moments and sink them down into relatable little bites, because that's constantly what you have to do when you're doing improv and performing, is relate to people in funny ways and take things that they're experiencing and build on them. And so that certainly helped lay the foundation a little bit for that. And then I also have a background in women's advocacy. I spent about a year and a half volunteering at the YWCA in Chicago as a rape victims advocate. So I think those two worlds kind of combined in a very interesting way and laid the foundation for this book.
You know, one of the things that was sort of glorious and shocking and maybe not so shocking about this book is you chose this format, you know, the old masters, that may seem random, but there are so many images where it's already baked in. Like, you almost didn't even have to write the joke. And the expressions on some of these women's faces, I don't think were intended to be used in the way you meant them, but they totally work.
And they're so funny. Some of their faces, I just look at the pictures by themselves and crack up.
Yeah.
The women's faces are so over whatever is being said to them.
Yeah. Some examples. There's a man leading toward a tired-looking woman, and he says, "Let me explain your lived experience to you." Mm-hmm. And in another, a man in a huge top hat has this arm around a conservatively dressed woman, and you captioned it, "You should wear something less revealing if you want to be taken seriously."
Mm-hmm. There's no amount of covering up that is enough sometimes. Like, there's nothing you can do to win.
Right? How did you pick the art for the book?
Well, I spent many days scrolling through various museums. A lot of museums like the Met, the Art Institute in Chicago. They have databases on their websites of open source content that's all available for public use. So I just scrolled through all of that and spent many hours, you know, looking for images of couples or women surrounded by men, or, you know, that would fit the theme of the book. But there's just so much out there, a lot of material.
You divided the book up into a few different types of behavior. Can you walk us through them?
Sure. I have the mansplainer. So the mansplainer is the guy who explains something to a woman, usually a woman, but it doesn't have to be a woman, obviously. Anyone can be on the receiving end of this. Explain something to them that they are more experienced in. It's usually very condescending. It's unsolicited. No one is seeking this out. The concern troll uses faux concern for you to undermine you and belittle you, which is, you know, that's the person who's like, I agree with what you're saying, but your tone is too angry or something like that. Mm-hmm. The patronizer, obviously we're all familiar. He uses your emotions against you. He's the guy who's like, I can't talk to you if you're going to get hysterical. Mm-hmm. your feelings are very valid and they use them against you. The sexpert is the cis man who thinks he knows your body better than you. He explains your periods to you. That guy. The comedian is the guy who gets very upset if you don't laugh at his jokes, which are usually offensive. They're sexist, racist, ableist, whatever. He tells you, you just don't understand comedy. You need to lighten up. That guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of experience with that guy.
What kind of response have you gotten from readers?
The response has been overwhelmingly positive. It's been really, really great. I don't seek out comment. Like, I didn't read the comments in the New York Times, but a lot of my friends send me the good ones, you know, so anything that's very positive makes its way to me. And on Twitter, obviously, it's been awesome. People are sharing their own stories. I've had so many men who recognize themselves in the book and are saying things like, yep, that's me. You know, I got to be more aware of that. Moving forward, I'm going to check myself a little bit, which has been surprising and wonderful. I've also had a lot of older women contacting me through my website to tell me how appreciative they are of the book and how they wish that it had been around for them when they were younger, which has been lovely.
Wow.
Yeah, overwhelmingly wonderful.
You know, I think that there's this, since we're having more of a conversation in the culture about how we hold each other accountable, mm-hmm. and how we react personally when we've, you know, made a mistake with somebody else, yeah. whether it's a white person talking to a person of color or a man talking to a woman or a straight woman talking to a, you know, LGBTQ person, it feels like there's been a bit of a backlash that, you know, some people think it's gone too far. They're feeling attacked. They're feeling not ready to hear these kinds of criticisms. And at the same time, like, these are recurring issues, say, for example, in any straight marriage. Like, my husband and I, he's, you know, we have this joke about Springsplaining because he totally loves Bruce Springsteen. And he's always quoting Springsteen lyrics at me to explain life's problems.
Oh, wow.
It kind of makes me nuts because I do think Bruce Springsteen is a lovely man. But do you think that the learning that's happening through this book and in other ways is going to stick?
I hope that it does. I think that people are more receptive to criticism when you can do it in a humorous way, you know, so you can make them laugh about it. They're like, they're laughing with you. They're like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. That is a thing that I do. And we're laughing about it together a little bit, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's less, it's easier for them to accept. And I'm hoping that that sticks with them over time, but who knows? They're very stubborn.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is comedian Nicole Tersini. She is the author of a new book called Men to Avoid in Art and Life. You know, you've alluded a couple times now to the fact that these situations have been really prevalent in your comedy life. Mm-hmm. Would you be okay sharing a couple of situations and maybe how you're dealing with them these days?
Sure. So obviously I don't really hang on to specific moments. They all kind of bleed together and no one wants to maintain the brain space for those. they all turn into one big moment. But like, I know that one example is just how these men in comedy have been coming out as saying, either being predators or making jokes about it, you know, very offensive jokes, and people will call them out on it and say, you know, that's not an okay joke to make. We're not going to support this kind of stuff. And then, you know, their fans get very upset and they come at you and they say like things, like I said before, about you just don't understand comedy. This is how humor works. You have to joke about things. So that's very frustrating because it's not how comedy works. You don't have to be offensive. And
well, I mean, this is a really interesting tension within comedy culture right now, because yes. Some people say that the whole point of comedy is to have a lab to work out ideas about society. Right. And like if you don't have Dave Chappelle making jokes where he's trying to freak himself out a little bit, you don't get the Dave Chappelle jokes that give everybody a new lens on things.
For sure. And, you know, anybody can joke about anything they want, but people are within their right to then not support that or seek that out. But I think that something really important to remember with comedy is that punching down is lazy. You know, if you're taking a shot at somebody who has less power than you or less power in whatever situation you're joking about, that's just lazy humor. And it's harder to craft jokes that punch up and make people laugh about things. I think it's so important to make people laugh about shitty situations. Like joking about things that are dark is, I love that. That's not the offensive bit. The offensive bit is when you make someone who has the less power, you make them the butt of the joke. So it's difficult. It definitely takes more work to craft jokes that don't do that. But so that's definitely a conversation that's happening in the comedy world right now, too. Yeah.
Do you think comedy has a power to address these issues that maybe a more straight-faced treatment can't accomplish?
Yeah, I do. Because as I said, I think that if you can make people laugh about things, they're more open to connecting about them, you know, more open to meeting you at your level and saying, I understand where you're coming from a little bit because you're making me laugh. You're making me laugh at myself and the situation, which is not the only way to do it, obviously. But this is just something that works for me. And it's something that I've found working on this book.
So do you find that you're responding to these incidents differently these days than maybe you would have 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, I certainly have less patience for it now. The older you get, I guess, the less you care about how people perceive you. Obviously, not in a way that's like, I want to go around offending everybody, but you give fewer shits about someone who's being terrible, caring about you. You know, it's easier to tell people to screw off the older you get, I guess. I just don't have the patience for it anymore. Like I did. I would take it a lot easier when I was younger, just kind of roll with it. You feel less secure in the situation, I think. But the older you get, the more power you have, the more comfortable you are in yourself and your ability to say, no thanks. This is not okay. I'm not wasting my time on this. Life is short and I don't have the energy for this particular exchange.
Do you think that's important?
To realize that you don't have the energy for it?
I mean, there's a school of thought that every moment like that is a teachable moment. But like you're saying, that's uncompensated labor for everybody right. Who's on the business end of an interaction like that.
Totally. And it's constantly weighing the situation, too, as you know, we do moving through life. We're always weighing situations. What's the safest way for me out of this? Is it worth my time to invest in this person and educate them a little bit? And usually for me, it's not, but sometimes it is. Sometimes I'll take the time and kind of tell them why what they're doing bothers me so much, just because, you know, moving forward, I want them to know that and be aware. But that's certainly something that everyone has to do on their own to assess, you know, what's best for them in that situation.
Hey, Nicole, this is a very strange moment for a lot of people involved in comedy, given that the club scene is pretty much non-existent.
Oh, I know. terrible.
And physical distancing has kept us away from a lot of other ways that comedians might express themselves. Mm-hmm. That said, there's this whole internet that still seems to be going great guns.
Yeah.
And you have a family at home to support too. How are you keeping busy, and what's it like trying to do creative work right now?
I know that for some people, working under stress and in stressful times is good for them. It feeds their art. For me, that is not the case. It is extremely hard to be creative right now. It feels like the world is melting down. I have my child that I have to, you know, her mental well-being is my number one focus right now. So it's very, very hard to create. And if you're a creator out there, know that you're not alone. If you're struggling, there are so many of us who just can't create right now, and that's totally fine. You know, everybody does their own works at their own pace in their own way. But for me, definitely, I'm struggling.
Is there anything that you've been turning to for reliable laughs these days?
I have been rewatching a lot of my favorite comedies, which is always a go-to of mine when I need a laugh, a boost. And actually little tiny memes and TikTok. I'm a thousand years old.
Oh, Gen Xer, I hear you. I see you.
It changes so fast, I can't keep up. But the little easy consumable videos, you know, that are very short, that you don't have to invest a lot of time or attention in, those are what's getting me through right now.
Nicole Tersini is the author of Men to Avoid in Art and Life, and she's been talking to us from her home in Ferndale. Nicole, you take care, and thanks for the great laugh.
Me too, April. Thank you so much for having me.